Comicast. Ireland's number one anti-homosexual podcast. Hate the haters.
All right,
because for a second there, I was confused, and I was like, "We're hitting the gays."
No, absolutely
we
not.
We love the gays.
We love the gays.
This is our interview special.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
For we interviewed Mr. Tom Moore.
Tom Moore of the Cartoon Saloon, Ireland's version of Disneyland Studios.
Yeah, they've got fucking roller coasters in Everton over there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So we went down to Kilkenny.
Yeah, to do an interview with him about The Secret of Kells.
Yeah, Brendan and the Secret of Kells.
I think it's just called The Secret of Kells. Is it? Here. That's what he said twice during the interview when you kind of called Brendan and The Secret of Kells.
I kept calling it Brendan and the Book of Kells.
No, yeah, I think it's just called The Secret of Kells. Okay. Most of what we saw in the thing just said The Secret of Kells.
All right, well, he's the director of this new animated feature film, which is going to be in cinemas March 6th.
Yeah, so definitely check it out. We'll leave that all afterwards. We'll give our impressions.
Yeah, okay.
Afterwards. So roll the tape.
All right, well, welcome to the Comicast. I'm Liam.
I'm Craig.
And we are here in the Cartoon Saloon in Kilkenny with Tom Moore.
Hello.
And this probably tops it for the coolest place we've been to.
Easily.
The coolest place we've done. Starbucks.
Better.
You might be surprised.
The coffee's good here.
Yeah, the coffee's better.
Yeah. But so how are you?
I'm Grant. It's a Saturday morning, so I'm pretty okay.
Yeah, Saturday morning,
you know.
Yeah. How much stuff, are you still working on in terms of the film, Brendan, and the Book of Kells, or The Secret of Kells?
The Secret of Kells is the title in Ireland and UK and stuff like that. So yeah, we're just finishing the second comic, which is going to come out with the DVD. The Aisling comic, so I'm still drawing the prequel part of that, and the first comic is finished up, but the film itself is in the can since last September. It'll be out now in March 6th. Everybody go twice, then go a third time with your granny, please.
It must be crazy to have finished it so long ago and still be working on, getting it out there.
The other thing is as well, I'm working on the comics, and the first few pages are original art, so they're interesting, but the rest of the comic is a mixture of original art and stuff from the film, and obviously that's the work of loads of people and stuff like that, so I'm still kind of going through old files and pulling out screenshots and just still kind of swimming in that water, so it's a little bit emotional, but you know, when I finish this comic, that'll be it for the film, so it'll be nice and past tense.
For people who don't know about the film, how would you kind of summarize it? Or
it's kind of a mixture of legends and fantasy and history all around, based around the time that the Book of Kells was being made in Ireland. And it's the story's focused on Brendan, who's a little boy who wants to be an illuminator. He wants to be an artist to work on the book, but he's not allowed to by his uncle, who's trying to protect everyone inside the walls of Kells from the Vikings. So the adventure is that Brendan ventures outside and goes into the forest and meets all sorts of mythical creatures and fairies and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Cool.
It's exciting.
We seem to have skipped very far forward into the present. Maybe we should talk about how you started in, how you got an animation watcher. We've skipped to the end.
I was going to try a new format and work us backwards.
Okay.
But hey,
the problem is we've been chatting all morning since before. Yeah,
we've probably done 4 or 5 podcasts already. We've been talking about it and watching footage. I guess we'll go back then to.
Where it sort of started originally was back in Young Irish Filmmakers up in the Waterford Road here in Kilkenny, and myself and a few of the other people in the studio were members of the Young Irish Filmmakers when we were teenagers.
All right.
And back then we set up a little kind of art collective and kind of got a bit of money to make our own comic, and we did the Always Groovy Dreamer Comet. real sort of indie kind of published on newsprint kind of job, and we did one issue, and that was all we could manage. And it had all these to be continued stories in it. And so we did that way back in the 90s or whatever, when we were teenagers. And then a few of us went to Ballyfermot Senior College.
Okay.
And we studied animation, and Ross Stewart, the art director, went there as well.
Alright. Yeah.
And then So after Ballyfermot, we kind of coalesced a little group together again, with a lot of the main people who worked on the film, as it turned out, to try and make the original version of the film, which was called Rebel, which was a different story, but it was based around the Book of Kells, a lot of the same characters and stuff, a lot of the same inspiration. And we worked on that in 2000, and we set up a little studio up in the Young Irish Filmmakers. And then by 2001, we had a, like, we'd been just do, we were just trying to do like anything to make money, like web design or e-cards, loads of e-cards. Yeah. It was just the start, like 1999, 2000. I'd worked in a CD-ROM company in Carlow during the summers in college, so we just were seeing that there was people putting money into it. So that went well for us for a while, and then the arse fell out of the internet around 2001.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we've been trying to get into TV and film and stuff, and we did a trailer kind of in the background. We had some money from Foss, like half our salary came from Foss, which was great. And we were living on beans and toast, like, but still, it was great. And there was, and we made a trailer of the original version of the film about the Book of Kells, which is called Rebel. We showed that in Cartoon Movie in 2001. And a Cartoon Movie is like a kind of an international forum, mainly for European, is specifically for European producers. They bring in funders from elsewhere, but mainly European producers. And then you try and hook up with other producers. So that was a bit of a baptism of fire. And we showed the trailer there. And we got involved with our co-producers, Les Amateurs, and they were just finishing up the Triplets of Belleville.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was like a torturous production for them as well. So by the time that was finished and in the can, and by the time we had a sort of a script that they felt was ready to go with and everything like that, it was like 2005. So that was the journey, you know, that was the adventure, you know.
Yeah. Did you write the script yourselves, or did you?
Originally, the original script. It was written here by myself and another fella, Aidan Hart, who ended up being the director of Skunk Fu.
All right.
But that script got like reimagined, and we worked with a French screenwriter called Fabrice Wilkowski, and then we got to a draft with him, and he kind of came in from the French side, and then myself and Nora kind of did a rough storyboard of that, and we changed things around, and then we worked with Fabrice again at the end to get the final draft. So it was kind of a collaborative soup that way. But
and where do you take it from, like, when you've like when you're doing like an animated film, are you kind of, when you're writing the script, are you kind of drawing as well?
Yeah, that was it. Like, and there was a lot of drawings already done, and then we started, like, I mean, it was a huge kind of, because it was kind of the project I was coming back to all the time between other projects. Like, Nora was making her short films, and we were doing commercials, and Skunk Fu was being developed and stuff, but I was coming back to this project, and so it was always coming back with Ross Stewart, the art director, and doing more designs and stuff as the script was being written. And there was always in the back of our minds that, like, worst comes to the worst, we'll do a comic of it, you know? Like, that we'll make some use of all this artwork and stuff like that. So it's kind of a nice full circle to be just doing the comics now, and then that's the end of it. Like,
yeah.
But, when we were working with Fabrice, I was still drawing and doing designs, but he was doing the bulk of the screenwriting and sending over stuff, and I'd give him notes, and then we'd meet up and stuff. But then we really got in and kind of did the final draft. After the rough storyboard, and then we sat down with Fabrice for a week in Paris and incorporated the stuff that we'd come up with in the storyboard into the final draft.
Yeah.
And then that became the shooting script that we recorded. So it was a nice kind of, it was over a longer period, but it was more or less the same process that, you know, the Pixar or the Disney thing would be.
Yeah.
But it was just stretched out because it was having to fit in between the bread and butter work, you know.
How many people would you have had animating the movie yet?
Oh, the movie was like mad thing because the finance was so patchy. Like, we raised the cash between Ireland, the Belgium, and France, but then the actual production of the work went out further again. Like, some of the animation was done in Hungary, some of the in betweens and clean up. If that's not too technical a term, I don't know. But the in betweens and clean up were done in Brazil.
It was big.
Yeah, but here in the studio we had about 35 people. And we here in Kilkenny we had about 35 people working on the film, about the same number working on the TV show upstairs. And what we basically said was, what we can control from here is the pre-production. We did 20 minutes of animation with just like 10 or 11 animators, just to kind of set the standard, set the style. We worked with a team of people that we'd worked with on the original trailer and some new people. And we did all the sort of the main background design. Ross Stewart, the art director, and Adrian and Lily, the background supervisors, kind of set it. We did about 200, 400, between 200 and 400 scene illustrations, you know, like, basically that was like the character, the background, everything all together there. And I mean, Barry Reynolds did all the final character design here and made all the model sheets and stuff here. And he's a really talented fella as well, by the way. He did the Tawn comic. I think he's got a new one coming out from Clomeo that he did with Coleman. I haven't seen it myself yet, but I'd say that he's a great artist. And so he did the final character designs, kind of pulling together all the stuff that I'd been doing and Stewie and everyone had been doing, and that he'd done himself back in 2001 into the final design. So we kind of pulled everything together here and made all the pre-production and all the designs and everything, and we did 20 minutes of animation, so we'd kind of got the ball rolling, and then after that it went out to all the different the different studios.
And how do you keep track of, like, being the director of a film that's being made all over the world?
I tried to, like, I kind of took the role of sort of overall director, but then I had Nora as co-director, and she was a brilliant, like, second opinion. And that was kind of like, we looked at the way they kind of coordinate stuff in, like, the Pixar movies and stuff like that. I always thought it was kind of the right way to do it. They had, you know, they have a co-director and an animation supervisor and, you know, an art director, that kind of thing. So they kind of delegate, and still they have one overall kind of director. So that was the way we tried to do it. And that worked pretty well. I mean, Adrian and Lily were really great as background supervisors. They were French, but they'd been interns here in the studio.
Okay.
And so they became Cartoon Saloon's background supervisors. So all the rest of the backgrounds were being done in France. I could really trust them to supervise that. And then the same with Nora, she took care of a lot of the animation that was coming in. But actually, Fabian Erlinghauser, the animation supervisor, he went over to Hungary and lived there for 8 months in the studio, working directly with the animators in the studio. So I'd go over every couple of weeks, you know, keep a check on him or whatever. And then Martin Fagan, who was the cleanup supervisor, he went to Brazil. So, you know, we kind of put our man in Havana, kind of. And then on top of that, we had this software called Hobsoft. And it was developed by two Danish guys. And basically, it was for European co-productions, because it always happens that you have to spend the cash in other places and go to where that you can afford to get the work done as well as where you might choose to, you know. But we were lucky with the studios we worked at. They were really good. I would have chosen them artistically just as much as for the price, you know. We weren't obliged to work with really, like, crappy studios or anything like that. They were good studios. And so the Hobsoft, what happened with that was that people would shoot their scene, they'd upload it onto Hobsoft, then that would be transferred overnight to our server, and myself and Nora could look at the stuff in time in the animatic on the Avid.
So cool.
So no matter, like, even whenever I was in France, say, working on the editing with the editor in France, I was still able to log on to my hotel room to Hobsoft and check what was going on in the other studios. Oh, okay. So it was pretty internet-y.
Was there ever any trouble with something coming back that wasn't right?
That was big. Huge. It was really huge. I mean, despite the amount of pre-production, like, we did all this layout posing. Barry and Fabian were, like, the layout pose supervisors, and they posed everything out, and they got the kind of like, every scene would have had the main beats of the acting posed out to show the animators how to draw the characters in that pose and what we wanted and stuff. And still it was tricky, because then the animators were still trying to put a bit of themselves in and at the same time follow the posing and at the same time be in the style, and they might be only on the project a couple of weeks, where we've been drawing the characters for years. So they had to, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it was all of that. So I'd say the biggest challenge was more the design stuff, you know, trying to keep it the right design. Like, generally we had pretty decent animators, and we didn't, anyone who wasn't really able to kind of dropped away fairly quickly, you know. So we ended up with a nice team, and then it kind of went faster then. But, like, it was that thing where by the last few months of each department you really knew how to do it, and then it was gone and you had to start another department, you know, the way. So I think that's part of why it took so long as well. I think in the big studios in America, where they have a big team, they probably have the same teething problems, but once it's rocking, they keep going with that team right to the end, you know. Whereas we kept on stopping and starting, like, all the animation in Ireland was looking good, and then we started with Belgium, that was looking good, and then we started with Hungary. So there was quite a few, but that was it. Like,
what's your favourite part of the process, like, out of everything? Would you rather be, like, animating yourself, or
so long since I was animating myself that I did get to a point where I felt a bit distant from it, that I wasn't animating. But then the second part of the film, the post-production and pulling it all together, was really enjoyable, because it was all starting to come together. And then the editing was surprising, because we worked with a French editor, and her background was more in live action, and I was all on my own by then. I didn't have any of my sort of usual comrades around me, and suddenly it was just me and her looking at the whole film and trying to cut 10 minutes out, because we'd animated 86 minutes and it was too long, and we had to cut it out 10 minutes out. And it was like making the film again. It was another process that was really enjoyable, because you kind of had something and then you were remolding it, you know. So that was nice. But for me personally, as an artist, my favourite period is the period I'm in now with the new film, where you're doing concepts and you're writing it and you're designing it and coming up with all that kind of stuff. So yeah, but once you get past that, it feels like manufacturing for a while when you're not an animator. You feel like you're just in control of a factory for a little while, because you're just kind of, the animators are getting into it and being artistically involved, but you're just trying to get the work done and up to a standard. Then you get to be creative again at the end. Start and the end are the best bits. The middle bit's kind of hell.
Yeah, yeah.
And warm. Where did you come up with the idea?
The idea spawned, as I said, out of that original version, and that was something I'd come up with Aidan, who was the director of Skunk Fu, and we came up with that in college, trying to do something. We were looking at The Thief and the Cobbler and things at the time. Did you know The Thief and the Cobbler?
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Williams movie, and because he was really buzzing off Persian art, we thought it would be interesting to do something based on Celtic art. Yeah. So that was the original spawn of the idea. But then, as I said, the story changed and evolved so much. I mean, Fabrice brought a lot into it, and Nora brought a lot into it, and so the final story is kind of more a universal story. But the idea of doing something based on Celtic art, yeah, just goes back to then.
Wow, yeah.
To college.
Yeah.
What about the cast and doing like recording voices and stuff like that? What was that like?
Yeah, it was really short actually. The voices, like, it was a week, but it was hard to find the kids. Like, and little Kristen Mooney, who did Aisling, she was like only 8 years old. Barry kid. We were going through a lot of girls, and they were kind of good and all, and we expected that we needed an 11-year-old, but she looked too young when she came in. We were like, oh, it's going to be painful. You know, when a little kid comes in, you just have to tolerate and kind of be nice to them, and then they go, but she was fucking brilliant. And she just was Aisling, so that was really great, because that clicked into place. And then after that, we found Evan over in Oranmore, Evan Maguire, and he did Brendan. And he was just kind of naturally, at the time, he's 14 or whatever, but at the time he was 11, he just felt like right for it. He was a great little actor, but he was already so close to the character just in his own mannerisms and stuff.
Yeah.
That was great. And then Brendan Gleeson had been involved since really early on. We'd contacted him. Paul had met him up in the Galway Film Flat, the producer Paul, and asked him to be involved in the original version of the project. So he'd been kind of supporting us. And then whenever we came to this final script, we sent it to him, and he still liked it, and we offered him a different part, and he took that.
Okay.
And then, yeah, Mick Lally was just, again, we didn't know who we were going to get for Brother Aidan, and because Brother Aidan's from Iona in Scotland, we were thinking we'd get a Scottish actor or a Northern Irish actor, but then we thought of Mick, and it just made sense, and we met him, and it was perfect. So that's the way it went.
You were saying like there's two comics coming out to coincide with the film that are going, there's kind of prequels.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's a bit of a mix up, right? Well, basically, what it was is Glenna, the publishers in France, and they're also publishing it in Holland and Belgium and stuff like that. The kind of Bandazine kind of world there, you know, they're kind of publishing it there. They wanted to do something that tied in with the movie, but because we already had picture books coming out with the O'Brien Press and with Milan in France, we kind of said, well, what can we do that's a bit different? And I was pretty happy to try and do a little bit more, because we had kind of an idea in our heads of what the backstory was of the characters, but didn't fit into the film. So we just did a few pages at the start, like 10 or 12 pages at the start of each one, filling the audience in on the backstory, and then the rest of it is just an adaptation of the movie, like a comic book adaptation of the movie. So the first one will be out. The first one's out. You can buy the first one on glenna.com.
Alright, okay.
Everyone go. If you're in France, and we're going to launch it in the Angoulême Comic Book Festival on February the 4th. And then the second one, which has the kind of Aisling backstory, that's coming out to coincide with a DVD release sometime in the summer, I think.
Cool. So you mentioned earlier on, you know, about concepts, and that's your kind of favourite part of doing things. But so you're working already on another movie.
Yeah, The Song of the Sea. So that was kind of an idea I had boiling around more or less since fairly early on in getting Kells off the ground in 2006 or so, and I started talking to Adrian, one of the background supervisors, and we started working with him back in 2006. Just sort of, again, the same thing in between. There wasn't much in between during the film, and it's still quite busy. But we started developing that idea. It's about a little Selkie girl, a little seal child, and she's the last one. And it's set in 1987, which is kind of interesting year, because I was 10 and we had Hurricane Charlie, and had the idea of the big storm being all the fairies going back. And so the idea is all the fairy creatures have been in Ireland for too long, and they're all kind of corrupted by modern Ireland, and like all the fairies are kind of fat and addicted to telly and video games and shit. Like, the little boy who's the sister, the brother, and his sister is a little seal child, but he's kind of cut off from the old mythology and stuff. He's just all into reading comics and playing computer games and all that stuff and watching the A-Team and all. And so he has to slowly be brought back into this world, so that he can help his sister go back and become a seal, because the fairies aren't going to be able to be in our world anymore after Halloween 1987. So that's the idea. Yeah,
that sounds good.
And it's kind of fun, because we're able to take a lot of what we learnt on Kells and apply it to another project, and hopefully work with the same partners, like the studios in Belgium and stuff. Are really great, and some of the same team and all.
Yeah. And we were saying earlier on just how like unique that like Brendan was for being like you know, because we were saying that hasn't been kind of like an Irish driven animated film or even.
Because I think we had the American films, the Don Bluth films were American films made in Ireland.
Yeah.
And then we had a few co-productions, which were like, I think the co-productions that Terraglyph did were mainly an Australian director, Dean Taylor and stuff. And then, there was different things, and Magma have been doing stuff, but there hasn't been something with sort of an Irish theme and Irish cast and Irish directors and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of the first in that sense, yeah. So that's And hopefully Song of the Sea will be a continuation of that, you know. We'll see, like, I mean, it could take a long time to get Song off the ground, and I always have my backup plan of comics and stuff, but the problem with Song, I originally thought it would be better to do it as a comic and it would just be done and I wouldn't have the pain of trying to get it off the ground, but because it's got music is a really important part of it, I wanted to work with Keela again and stuff, so I kind of thought it kind of has to be a movie.
We didn't mention that Keela did the music for...
Yeah, Bruno Calais was the composer, and then Keela they did an original song, and they did one of their old songs in, and they played all the music in the film, so they were a big part.
From the bits we saw, the music was really good.
They were great, and they're kind of able to do more modern stuff. I was working with a writer in Galway, the film board recommended on Song of the Sea, a nice fellow called Will Collins, and one of the things that we've been talking about lately is how much music can influence, you know, can kind of give you a mood, like we were like picking songs and music and sending it to each other, like, oh, this is kind of the vibe for that, and it really, you know, it's a massive part of it. So we found one tune that Keela had done, and that we just kind of like a key tune that we kind of listened to, it's kind of got the mood for it. So it is, that's the thing, you know, between comics and film, that some stories really, I think, are suited better to comics, and I'm always disappointed by the film. I won't mention what ones, but then there's other stories that are like, they wouldn't to be as satisfying in comics, I think, because they wouldn't have the music and the stuff like that. So it's always the kind of balance between the two.
Just to digress for a second, you were telling us earlier about a project on TG Carr about like animating.
The Shiog Naran projects. Yeah, that's nice. Nora directed a short that was co-produced with Sunta over in Connemara called Cooling Duloc, a boy with his head on backwards. Myself and Ross Stewart were the art directors on that, and that was a nice collaboration with them. So they came back to us there last year with this project they're doing for TG Carr, where they're going to record like Irish musicians like Paul Brady and Sinead O'Connor and stuff singing traditional Irish songs, and then we're going to do the animation for it. So that's nice. Yeah.
That's exciting. And when do you reckon that might could be?
Oh, broadcast at Christmas, Nick. Should be ready for this Christmas. Yeah.
Excellent. And you're saying about the comics, like as a backup plan, and you showed us a comic that you were kind of working on.
Yeah, the Coffin Shape. And
is that something you'd like to?
The idea, I suppose, it's always there. The problem with comics is trying to make them financially viable outside of the mainstream, you know. And so the idea for us, we always loved comics, and we did the comics with Coleman. I did the St. Patrick ones, and Paul did Toriach and Barry did the Tawn and stuff, but like they're not a huge amount of money, you kind of more do them for the love of it, you know. And like we had the ambition during the production of Skunk and Brendan to do a Cartoon Saloon kind of anthology, and Cliona Lyons, who was working here on the film, was interested in pulling it all together and all, but we just didn't have the cash to pull it all together and do it justice, you know, so it's still kind of on the back burner like that. So the idea for me is, like I was saying earlier on, that my wife studied ceramics in NCAD, and it's so hard to make a living as a ceramicist, so now she teaches and her ceramics are kind of able to be whatever she wants, she doesn't have to do them for the market. So I'm kind of hoping that's the way we can go with comics, that we can do comics of the projects and they can be kind of more free than the more commercial projects, you know what I mean?
Because
I used to love all the superhero stuff and Batman and everything like that, but as I've gotten older I got more interested in like Chris Ware and Craig Thompson and people like that. And to have the freedom to do that kind of stuff, I think you need to. It needs to not be like your day job, you know.
Yeah.
You need to be free from having to please publishers and audience. You need to just make it and then see how you find an audience.
Yeah, yeah. Which kind of like, well, you said Chris Ware and Craig Thompson, but like what what other kind of comics or authors would you be?
Jeff Smith was an influence on the film, even the Bone was like, even in the just the feel of the stories and everything like that was always an influence there, and my absolute, like, honestly, the most exciting artist in any medium at the moment for me is Chris Ware. Like, mm-hmm. I just think he's just amazing, and I think he crosses over, like, as a novelist, he's probably the most interesting novelist, as a comic book artist, as a cartoonist, and, you know, it's really interesting what he's doing. And then a definite close second would be Craig Thompson. I just love his stuff as well. It's so honest, and his art style is so expressive.
Yeah.
We were just talking, like, I follow his blog, and I'm so jealous of the fact that, you know, he's sitting there, and he's just got this big pile of, and that's it. The comic is there. It's not like on a hard drive somewhere. That's it. And so, yeah, I think, and his sketchbooks, you know, the way he publishes his sketchbooks and his travels and stuff, and he's just brilliant like that. And then there's a comic book artist that I really love. He's French, and he's had one book published in English called The Three Shadows, Cyril Pedrosa. You have to read that. Like, I started reading it again there last night because it's just beautiful. If you don't cry at the end of it, you're not human. It's beautiful. And he's very like Craig Thompson. His background is in animation, so he'd be a little bit more cartoony, but very like Craig Thompson, that brush pen kind of feel, you know. Black and white stuff. But, yeah, Cyril Pedrosa, The Three Shadows. I'm not getting paid by anybody, but you should seek it out. I know it's published in English. I found it online in English, so it's really great.
Yeah, we'll look it up and put a link up.
Yeah, do get people reading those ones, because as much as the mainstream stuff is fun and all like that, I think that's where the most interesting thing is happening.
So what about just talk about Skunk Fu.
Well, Skunk Fu wasn't a project I was majorly involved in. I mean, like, it was a project that the studio had developed, and Aiden had was the main creative force behind that, and then he's left the studio now. He's working, he's as a kind of a, he studied sculpture and fine art and stuff. I'm not sure what he's up to now, but Skunk Fu was developed more or less alongside the film in the studio, and it went into production around the same time as the film. It was finished a lot sooner. It was finished about a year ago. And it's on TG Cahir and BBC, and it did quite well. It's been sold into like 110 countries.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, like, we're yet now to see any substantial amount of cash coming back in. Partly because, you know, these things are so expensive to fund that you raise the cash almost based on money you have to pay back once. You know what I mean? There's toys out now and things like that.
Yeah. So. It was nominated for a BAFTA, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was nominated for a BAFTA and it won an IFTA. It didn't win the BAFTA. It won an IFTA. And I know, it was a good old crack.
Did
kind
you of, get to go over?
I didn't know. See, again, I mean, the producer Jordan and Paul went over, and director went over, so it's sort of like the other half, you know, went there. But we had some nice cross pollination as well. People that worked on Skunk Fu came down and worked on the film for a while, and some of that went on. It was just nice having a big kind of crew and that kind of art college atmosphere again for a while.
So. Yeah, yeah. I was just I meant to say there, like, when you're just talking about Craig Thompson and all the sketches and stuff. Like, do you keep all the all the drawings and?
Yeah, I keep on mine, like, as much as I can. I'm very badly organised. I try and scan stuff and keep it that way in case it gets lost.
Yeah.
But there was so much artwork generated for the film that we just sort of said to the artist they could have it back, you know, because it's just anyone who wanted it could have it back, because otherwise, I mean, it's still in storage up there. We thought we'd have to recycle it, but it's all sitting in storage upstairs. But, like, you know, they're kind of artefacts and they mean something to the person who worked on them, but the overall package on a film and even in a comic is kind of the published thing, the finished thing, and then the artifacts are sort of something else, you know. But I keep my own stuff and try and keep a little sketchbook and try and keep. I really was inspired by when I saw Chris Ware's date book, that he makes little comics all the time, so he's kind of fluent in comics. He's kind of, you know, the way you might write a note and draw a little doodle, but he actually makes a little comic of his idea, like, and even makes a little comic of something embarrassing he said, and he's just fluent in comics. So I was really jealous of that, and I read that and I went, oh fuck, look, he's 32 and he made that, and, oh, fucking and then you're like, how am I going to catch up? And you know, you'll never catch up, he's a genius or whatever. It's, you let yourself off the hook by going, oh, he's a genius. But I did start trying to make little daily comics, and usually they're so personal that there's nothing for them except just to keep them for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a way to try and develop a fluency, you know.
Absolutely. And what other we were talking about Old Fangs earlier on, and I've seen some of the images on that on the blog, and it looks amazing.
Really beautiful project, and really kind of like, I'm so happy we're doing it. Like Nora's first film, From Darkness, is still my favourite film, because it was a little bit darker and a little bit more artistic than the other stuff that we were doing. And Old Fangs is like a really good short in that vein. Adrian is the art director on Song of the Sea, and he was the background supervisor on Kells, and now he's directing Old Fangs, and he's really inspiring to be around. He's a cool cat. He's only like, I think he's like 26 or 27, but he's just stupidly talented. He's a really, really talented guy, and he's got a lovely attitude to directing, where I was quite uptight and kind of like trying to get everything looking the same. He's got a lovely kind of anarchy. It's very inspiring scene. He lets everyone kind of do their own thing, and it all kind of comes together. He's got such a loose style, and he's kind of got this kind of Terrence Malick kind of attitude to time, and kind of keeps everything slow and very paced out, you know. And his design style is so kind of sketchy for the characters that he kind of lets everyone kind of do their own interpretation of things, and it's very interesting how it's shaping up. So I'm excited about that project.
Where do you go when you like finish like a short film, because you've done quite a lot of short films here.
The short films that we did here that went anywhere were Nora's shorts, really. And Cooling Duloc was destined for TV because it was funded mainly by Tichy Carr, but it went around to festivals and won quite a few awards and festivals and stuff. But From Darkness was the first film, which is a Frameworks, which is like Old Fangs as well, which is like a film board scheme that they do with RTÉ and the Arts Council. You get the money, it's like about half of what you need, basically. You get about half of what you need, and then you do the rest with like blood, sweat and tears, and then it's just festivals. That's just kind of the audience that short films really have, is festivals. I think there's a new audience opening up on the internet. Again, it's not worth any cash or anything, but like short films are kind of a mixture between a calling card for the studio, then the shows, you know, this is what we can do, and just they're like paintings or something, you just sort of put them out there for the sake of it. But yeah, festivals are the main kind of route for short films, and then you just enter them in. You just literally, you usually start off with Galway or whatever, and then after that you just try and enter them in.
Are you working on any more at the minute, or
shorts?
Yeah,
I know that any shorts just that we're working on now are sort of in that kind of embryonic stage. There's nothing definitely going to be the next one. No, but no, it'd be nice to keep going with them. The nice thing about them is they kind of keep a certain ethos to the place, you know, like even though they don't really make you much cash, but like right now the lads who are animating the trailer for me for Song of the Sea, they're finished on that, and there isn't the commercial that they're going to go on to isn't starting for a week or two, so they're getting a couple of weeks on Old Fangs, you know, that kind of thing. It kind of keeps a kind of a lifeblood to the place as well, so that's nice, you know?
Is it just when you were saying like to they're finished animating the trailer, like is there any kind of, like, is that hard to, you know, when you're animating the trailer, you know, and then you're going to make the film kind of almost different separately, or
The trailer, there's two different types of trailers. I mean, there's trailers that no one really sees. Again, now with the internet we'll probably put stuff up online, but there's trailers that no one really sees outside of the industry. You make these like little test promo pieces where you animate a piece of the film or shots from the film just to show the film to other funders and stuff like that. So that's the trailer we're doing now for Song of the Sea, and that's like the trailer we did for Brendan back in the day, and you just show it in Cartoon Movie and festivals and stuff and try and get people involved. And then there's the trailer that's like bits of the film cut together by the distributor, which is a completely different beast and completely different thing. And sometimes it's like, even you can have three or four trailers from the same film, you know, just trying to show different aspects of it. But the promo trailer is more a kind of a sales tool, trying to get the finance raised.
Is the original trailer for Brendan available? Can we watch that online?
I could show it. I'm going to try and get it online. We only have it on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. I showed it in Annecy, and it was quite funny because I had to bring in VHS, like, box, you know, look at this. But yeah, it's quite fun, and it's the amount that it contrasts is quite fun. Yeah. It's a very different project, and I worked on that, worked more closely with Aidan on that than anyone else, and Ross Stewart, of course. But then Aidan went off into Kung Fu, and the project completely changed. So it's almost interesting, just as a contrast, to see how much it changed from the promo trailer. And we did a kind of interim promo trailer where the characters, the story had changed, but we were still kind of keeping a lot of that original art style, and we did a few extra scenes to kind of change the focus, and we showed that again in a Cartoon Movie, but it was still too stuck in the old way, so we had to completely reimagine it. And so we never made a promo trailer for the project as it is now. We kind of sold it based on a promo project trailer for another script and another story and everything. So that's how much things can change, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even Song of the Sea, it's mad. Like, from the time I said, this scene is definitely in the film, it has to be in the film, I really want to do it. The mother comes in, wakes up the little girl, and takes her outside, and they jump into the water, they turn into seals, and they go and meet the grandmother seal. And I said, this is the image that's been in my head that made me want to make this movie. It's definitely in the movie. So let's animate that. So I storyboarded that, and Adrian did the backgrounds for it, and we got going on that. And then, literally within a week of working with the scriptwriter, Will, that scene was gone. And he said, oh, you can't have the mother in it, it's mad, you need to start with the little girl. And I was like, oh shit. So, you know, already I already know the likelihood is the trailer we've done for Song of the Sea won't be in the movie.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great, isn't it?
What kind of studios or animated films, you know, and directors, and like what do you like in terms of other people's work?
Yeah,
you know, Studio Ghibli, loads of,
yeah,
kind
of course,
stuff.
Ghibli, and everyone says that, and Miyazaki, and of course, yeah. I mean, definitely for Song of the Sea, like Will and myself love Totoro, even though it doesn't have a classic arc or anything like that. It's just the feel of that movie, the humanity of that movie, Totoro and Kiki. I love that. I don't, honestly, I know it's sacrilege, I don't really like Spirited Away or Howl's Moving Castle. They're just massive and confusing, and I don't really, you get lost in them, you know. Whereas Totoro and Kiki, what I love about those is you're focused on a character and you've got a lot of, you know, kind of intensity in there. And I do like the Disney movies. Like, I do like, I know what they are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But especially things like Sleeping Beauty, that kind of high point. Mm. Love that stuff, 101 Dalmatians. I do really love them. Not so much as sort of like director movies. I love them for the art. I love them for the backgrounds and the animation and the whole thing like that. But like, the stories were pretty sappy, but you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Things like Triplets and stuff like that are way more interesting as a film, you know. But the art style and stuff in some of the Disney stuff I really like. But not a huge fan. Like, it's funny, I was talking to one of the animators here. When I was younger, I used to go to every animated film, and I've stopped going. I'm not a huge fan of animated films that are in your average omniplex. Like, I haven't seen some of them. And some of my friends have worked on them as well, friends of mine that are working in the States, and you kind of go just to see their name in the credits. Like, I loved Kung Fu Panda, that was great fun, and nice animation, and Wall-E was beautiful.
Yeah.
Pixar you can usually rely on.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other ones are not, they're like something else again to me. Those 3D CG movies, they're like another thing. They're like X-Men comics, you know. They're comics, and I like comics, but I'm not particularly gonna, you know what I mean? I used to, but you know the way, so I think it's for a different audience and stuff.
Yeah. What about, like, any particular TV shows, cartoons?
Samurai Jack.
Yes. Samurai Jack. That's what we were waiting for.
Can't get enough of Samurai Jack. nothing compares. I mean, I got the Hellboy movie, and I was looking, the animated Hellboy movie, I was really looking forward to that. I was like, they should have given it to Gendy, you know. Yeah. So, like, the art is great and all in it, but no, it's nothing compared to Samurai Jack. Yeah. And what they do with just inspiring. That, and I love the Warner Brothers superhero cartoons. I just, total nerd for them. I just think they're really, I prefer them to the comics, like the Batman cartoons, all the Bruce Tim. I really think he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
Like, what he does with the corniest stuff, and he makes it really fun.
Yeah.
And it's a that funny thing that the superheroes, to me, seem to work better in cartoons now. The comics have almost gotten preposterous.
Yeah.
And the movies, you know, like, I loved the Batman movies that Chris Nolan did, but it's still a guy in a suit, and there's something a little bit sad about it. Like, but when he's a cartoon, it works.
Yeah,
it makes sense as a cartoon.
Yeah.
It works as a drawn. And on the page, it's a bit like, I don't know, maybe it's just because I read so many of them, it's like they're the same story again. But as a cartoon, there's something interesting going on, and the timing and stuff in those. But Samurai Jack, jeez, I just watched that. It's like crack. I just can't get enough. love that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked his Clone Wars as well, actually.
This is the best Star Wars thing in.
Because dialogue sounds so shit coming out of a real person.
Yeah.
But when it's like a Scooby Doo type character, it's fine. You don't mind. And then it's just the action, and the action is brilliant.
Yeah.
And no one spent hours trying to get the glow off the lightsaber, right? Wanky stuff. It's just like, wah, wah. It's brilliant.
I don't know if it's in the atrocious CG Clone Wars thing.
Oh, I know. I was disappointed. Now, I thought the designs and stuff were really suited to 2D, and I don't think they translated into 3D. But, you know, I think the guys working on that were under a certain brief, and, you know, their hands were a bit tight. I hope they do something more interesting in the TV show. They might have a bit more freedom there. You know?
Yeah. Is CG anything that Cartoon Saloon might want to try at any point, or
I'm more and more interested in the what's the word, not the look, that people associate with CG, but the efficiencies of it. More and more guys over in Belgium in digital graphics studio, they're like really interesting because they've kind of got an artistic point of view that's different. I don't think there's any point in us trying to do CG that's all shiny and Pixar-y, because it just always looks not Pixar.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't keep up. Like, I was over there last year and it's just huge. It's like an airport full of people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's huge, and the money, and it's Silicon Valley and all that. I just think you're nothing. And our kind of trademark more and more has become 2D. Yeah. But CG in the sense of computer generated, yeah, more and more. Like, even we're using a nice software for Song of the Sea called TV Paint. Yeah. And it looks just like hand-drawn animation. It even looks like a pencil, you know?
Yeah.
But you've got the efficiency of drawing straight into the computer. You don't have scanning. You don't have the kind of environmental unfriendliness of stacks of paper, you know, all that kind of stuff. And even just when you're working with multiple studios and you're shipping paper around, it's a fucking nightmare, like if something gets lost or whatever like that. So at least you can have backups and stuff with the CG 2D, you know.
Yeah.
Like Flash was the first step towards CG for us, in the sense that it had that efficiency in it, and I saw that on Skunk. I was very jealous of them on Skunk. They were able to take a scene back from the Philippines and just play with it here, and then it was better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They didn't have to send notes or supervisor over there to kind of get it right. Do you know what I mean? They were able to play with it directly because the file was manageable. So that's kind of what inspired me. But then TV Paint is a bit better than Flash because it's more organic and it's a bit more... So yeah, but the actual seed computer, yeah, no. It's not my cup of tea. As I said, like, the look of it is kind of something I'm not really interested in, and the what it's associated with so far is not... I'm sure it can do much more interesting stuff than farting animals, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there is stuff... I mean, I saw this film, The Pueur de Noir. It's all comic book artists directing it. Have you seen it? Fears of the Dark?
Oh, French movie. This is... Oh, Whedon. Is it out yet?
Oh, yeah, it's out.
We saw the trailer.
Oh, okay, yeah. It just looked with...
I saw it in Angoulême, and it's like Blutch, you know, that guy. And there's Charles Burns in it.
Yeah.
And Maguire, your man, that American guy, he did a brilliant one. Something Maguire, I can't remember his first name. All black and white. It looks like indie comics animated.
Yeah.
And it's great. And half of it's CG and Flash and things like that. And it looks brilliant.
Yeah.
Really brilliant. And it's mad. Like, only the French would make a feature film.
Yeah.
Like six different horror stories.
Yeah.
Don't know who. I sent the girl from the film board. She was over in Cartoon Movie, Emma. Lovely girl. And I said, oh, you have to see this. This is what cartoons can do. To get out of your head what cartoons are. Go and see this. And she came out really traumatized. She was like, what the hell did you send me to? Like, you know, insect sex fucking fucked up. But it was great because it was nice to see someone was doing something interesting.
Yeah.
But I still prefer... That's the thing about CG, like, they got really close to Charles Burns' drawings, but I still prefer his drawings.
Yeah.
And the CG was like a fake drawing.
Yeah, it was kind of... I've seen that in the trailer, right? It looked a bit odd, but still cool.
They did a great job, and it's interesting to see someone trying something like that with CG rather than, you know...
The fur looks so real!
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
What would you say to, like... There seems to be like a lot, well, maybe not a lot, but a good deal of animators and animation going on in Ireland.
Yeah,
like it's like kind of a surprising amount.
We suffered in 2006 from the boom in animation. We weren't able to get crew. We ended up taking people in from all over them. Like, most of the Irish animators were tied up in Boulder and Brown Bag and stuff, which is great.
Yeah.
But it was hard for us at the time because we always thought, like, once we get off the ground, everyone will flock here. But it was hard. And we got some great talent, like I said, but at the same time the boom kind of, and now I think it's levelled off. I think the whole world is going through a bit of a crunch, and it's tricky now as well. I mean, I don't think that anyone's as busy as they were. Maybe Brownback, they're kind of like the kings of that stuff, and they still seem to be rocking. They're doing Noddy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think it's kind of levelled off a bit, just in the sense, like, it's much better than it ever was still, because it's like the house prices, you know, they'll come down a bit, but it's still like, now there's still like quite a lot of Irish animation going on, and there's guys like Jam Media and stuff who are quite clever. They're really just focusing on concept and design, and then everything else is going to Canada or whatever like that. So yeah, there's stuff going on. The factories aren't really there anymore. There's not the big like studio with 150 people in it, and you know what I mean, everyone gets lots of little interesting small companies doing interesting things and well punching above our weight. Like, well, it'd be nice if the Irish comic book sort of thing happened in the same way.
People have
been talking about it for years, but there was a while when we were just like, there was a place up in Dublin just colouring American comics, you know. And it's like, that's not really what we need to be doing. Like,
yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
obviously going to go to Asia really quickly. but no, if we could have the same kind of boost, it would be great.
So yeah, yeah. We'll are there any like Irish comics that you might have...
Oh, it's Clam Nuts. I love Bob Byrne stuff, just love his stuff. And we dilly-dallied with the idea of trying to animate some of his stuff.
You were saying, yeah, the Mr. Emperduke.
When we read the first Mr. Emperduke, we thought that just the first issue made a little short in its own.
That's great, right?
The whole thing, I think, is a comic. And God bless the mentalist. Some French person might make that into a film. I love his stuff, and I think he's really interesting because he's exactly that thing, isn't he? He's that someone making comics that can't be any expressed any other way, and they're getting out there, and they're very personal and very him. And I love that. It's really talented. And there's bits and pieces. I don't really, in terms of Irish comics, I know the lads like Stephen and stuff doing like the mainstream stuff and fucking doing super work on those. But I don't really follow Irish comics that much. I've seen bits and pieces. I saw the stuff Stephen was doing. Before he kind of was doing the American stuff and all, but no.
I guess there's not so much to follow, really.
Yeah.
It's tough.
We try to review some every week, and it's tough. We're running out of comics.
And you end up with, there's some of the stuff isn't great, and you have to be honest. And
absolutely. A lot of stuff.
Majority of it.
And it's like the majority of anything isn't great, but then you kind of narrow it down to Ireland, and then narrow it down to the people who want to make comics in Ireland,
and narrow it down
to people who want to read comics in Ireland. So
it's very small.
It gets to me a bit. The one thing that's a bit depressing for me about comics, it's a bit like poetry. You know, sometimes they say that there's more people publishing poetry books than there are people reading poetry. You know, there's more like they're writing it for other poets. You know, so it's kind of the cool thing and the bad thing about it. Like, because it's such a localized market and small market, you can kind of do more interesting stuff. But it's also a bit difficult to get anything going, you know. But I noticed there's this Re-Raw, this Irish language kids comic coming out.
I've seen this.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that. It's interesting.
Yeah, but it's drawn stuff for it, isn't
no.
it? Yeah.
Oh no, the poor children. I love it. He did O'Brien Press books, and even though they're really cute and all, but there's something dirty about them. Because you know what Bob is going. Oh, it's weird.
I think he was saying before that, I don't think he said this on the interview, but just that, presumably the guy from O'Brien's, his son, the top guy there, but his son was reading, like, some of Bob's stuff, you know, his son is only, like, you know, 9 or 10, but reading, you know, Bob's kind of stuff, and he said, like, this is good, and apparently that's how that took off.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it's nice that he's doing that stuff. It's funny, it's like the stuff that, you know, he does these kind of like super cute characters and then does fucked up stuff with them in his own comics. But it's like you're waiting for that to happen. But they never happen because they are actually kids' books. And they're lovely. They're really cute little kids' books. But you're going, there has to be another page where they get fucked up or something. It's probably Bob has that for himself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So how's the publicity now just for the film? The film's coming up obviously real soon. I seen on your blog that you did you go to the premiere of Beverly Hills Chihuahua with, and you brought a dog.
I did a little stunt where they invited everyone to bring their little dogs.
How did that work? Was it not just loads of dogs everywhere?
Yeah, there was loads of dogs, and some of them were those little, you know. I was thinking about, I got the Ren and Stimpy, you know Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah.
I got the box set of that for Christmas, and I was watching the special features, and there's this photograph of this mental chihuahua, like all dressed up like a little cute little, looks like a serial murderer dressed up as a little girl, like, and the eyes are going in two directions, and there was loads of those are little dogs in fluffy coats with bows in their hair, they looked like really angry, because they're just like big. It's like big dog personality, like shrunk down with a Honey I Shrunk the Kids, right? So there was all these little dogs around, but they actually settled down. They were really well behaved. It was really bizarre. And our little dog is like she's a cross between a beagle and probably a Jack Russell. We don't know what the father was. The mother was a beagle anyway, and she was really really well behaved. I thought it wasn't going to work at all.
It was
bizarre. They all sat and they kind of watched it, and then they'd kind of look around, and then they'd look up, and then the dogs on the screen barked. All the dogs looked up. It was fun. But the big thrill for us, of course, was we sat kind of over in the corner because we thought maybe Poppy, our little dog, wouldn't be that well behaved. We might have to leave.
Yeah.
And then the trailer came on. The Buena Vista trailer for the Kells came on. And we were kind of watching it at an angle. You know, when it's like in perspective. It was like, oh, shit. But it was cool to see it. Like, so
yeah.
Apparently it's playing in front of some bedtime stories, and they're going to put it in front of Bolt and stuff like that. So that's the Disney promo has been great so far, and Trish and Ruth and stuff in Disney have been really kind of proactive, and loads of ideas for pushing it, you know.
Has there been a positive reaction to the trailer?
I don't know. I haven't heard any reaction to the trailer. I mean, everyone's looking after their dogs that day. But the nice thing with, I was really kind of worried there on the 7th there. I was over in France, and we had the first sort of public screening of the film. It was in French, like, but there was an audience with kids in it, lots of kids in it, and it was great. They weren't too, we were always afraid they might be scared of the Vikings and stuff, but they weren't scared, and afterwards they had loads of great questions. They were really interested in, and it was very positive, so I felt a lot of relief after that. Like, and the people had paid to go to see it. That was amazing.
Yeah.
The first time anyone had paid, and someone had gotten out of their house, put their hand in their pocket, paid, went in and watched it. That was amazing. That's really great. But no. So far, it's been nice. We've only heard nice things so far. So, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Did you oversee the voice recording for the French version? Did you have?
No, not really. There was a voice director that I met, and then the screenwriter was French, Fabrice. So he kind of sat in on that, and then there was a Flemish thing as well. So we kind of head picked the voices. I heard all the voices early on. They sent it to me online, and I said, "Oh, he sounds pretty decent." Mm. And but no, all of that. And it was really interesting to see it interpreted again. You know what I mean? Yeah. And in Flemish as well. So it's fun, like.
Yeah. Was that your first time seeing it on the big screen?
No, I'd seen it in the big screen a few times for different reasons. You know, different screenings. Like, there was a Disney screen, and then Keela came, and the keeper of the book, Bernard Meehan, came, and people like that. And it was more just to see people that had been, to let people who'd been involved in the film see it. So that was nice. But it was the first time seeing it with an audience of people who weren't sitting there hoping to like it. You know, people who were just sitting there. There was a little 6-year-old, a tiny little guy. He put up his hand and goes, "I like it when the baddies bang down the door." Brilliant. You know, it's the exact bit everyone was worried about. And he said, "That's my favourite bit." And it wasn't even a question, it was just he sat down, just sat down again afterwards. You know? So that was great.
I don't have any other.
Yeah, I think we've covered quite a lot.
Yeah.
We've gone through.
I have to edit it a bit or something, but anyway.
No,
we don't
either.
The last word doesn't just go straight on. No music.
All right.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah.
Thanks, lads.
What's the date? Just repeat the date the film is out.
Oh, the 6th of March.
6th of March.
Everyone go
twice. Right. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, lads.
And we're back.
Yeah, so that was an interview.
It sure was.
Yeah. So, when we were down at Cartoon Saloon, I was, A, disappointed.
Why?
Yes, well, I didn't say this to Mr. Tom Morris at the time, I apologise, but it wasn't really like a saloon at all.
Like, didn't have the doors.
Didn't have the doors, there was no bars, there was no
brawls.
Piatti. You know, what the hell?
Yeah, we were expecting Tom Morris to be wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah. I just thought there'd be shootouts left and right. That's not true. I wasn't expecting that at all. We got to see two scenes from.
We got some sneak previews.
And what do you think, Liam?
I was bowled over.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Genuinely bowled over. It's kind of it looks awesome. It kind of, the only thing that I can think, if you were to equate it to something that it might look like, it looks a bit like Samurai Jack.
Yeah, I agree. It has it.
But really, it's really lush, and like every shot looks like, you know, they put thought into it. The composition is really great. It looks beautiful.
Absolutely. And it's really funny, the two bits we saw.
Do you know what I found really weird?
No.
Watching some of the film, like with the director, you know, beside you. And, you know, at first I was thinking, I'll have to, like, regardless whether I like it or not, I'll have to
pretend
I like it. Yeah. But it was really, really great, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, the book there, when I hear a movie, The Secret of Kells anime movie, not something I immediately say yes, I want to see that. But I was blown away. It looks amazing, so I would certainly recommend anyone who is hesitant, maybe they think this isn't a thing, but it looks awesome. Craig, even negative Craig over here thinks it looks really good.
It warmed your icy heart.
It did, it melted it, and now a small little piece of heart remains. Can I tell you a little story?
Please do.
Last night, although by the time you hear this, it will be plenty of, you know, time will have passed, but I slept on a couch.
Okay.
And my arm kind of got stuck in, you know, between the cushions of the couch while I was asleep. And when I woke up, this is not a word of a lie, when I woke up, my arm from my elbow to my fingers was completely paralyzed. Like, no feeling. Like, I tried to, like, move my fingers, nothing happened. If I move my, I could move my arm, you know, using my shoulder, and my hand would just flop. Like it was amazing. I was actually really excited for like maybe 10 seconds, and then I was like, what if I'm stuck like this permanently? Whatever I've done was cut off the blood supply, and now my arm needs to be amputated. But then, and then just the feeling of blood coming back into my arms was also a spectacular sensation. So I would recommend all people, all listeners, go to sleep tonight with their arms stuck in between the couch and see what that feels like. It was amazing.
That is amazing. What's amazing is that you brought up a completely random story, and I thought you were going to tie it back to the cartoons or animation. I thought you were going to say that your dream was secretly to be an animator and that your hand had lost all feeling and you wouldn't be able to animate anymore. No. Random story.
Yeah. I just thought I'd share that with the listeners.
Do you want to tell the train story?
Sure.
It was pretty exciting.
Well, you could tell it.
Okay, well, when we came out of the cartoon saloon, not a saloon, a building, in fact.
We were hit by a bench.
Yes, we were. Because when we came back outside, Kilkenny was in the midst of...
the biggest storm Ireland has ever seen.
Yeah, an apocalypse.
Yes.
And it was just, it was insane. And we went into a shopping centre, which... One design flaw was that it didn't have a roof.
Yes.
So it was just raining within a big fucking shopping
centre. Shit was getting blown all over the place.
It was insane. Yeah. But
and then our train got held up by a tree falling on the track.
Yes.
And they had to get the chainsaw man down because the passengers on the train were not strong enough to be able to lift it.
Yeah, basically we were just listening to intercom announcements, and the first one kind of went, "Your train is going to be delayed because there is a tree has fallen on the track and it will take a while to sort that out. So we'll get back to you on that." And then like 10 minutes later, the passengers and now the employees are trying to lift the tree off the track. Should take them around 15 minutes. We'll get back to you. And they get back to us again. "The passengers and the employees were not able to lift the tree. We've sent for a chainsaw man."
It should be just in the yellow pages, like, "Call chainsaw man."
Oh, what a guy.
I've got another quick story before we put an end to this. I was reading the newspaper, The Star, yesterday.
What a paper.
Yeah, well, this will tell you the quality of this paper. And there was a small story. I was going to bring it down and actually read it out, but I'll just paraphrase. And it was something to do with the Shoga sisters. Did they have a show together now?
Yeah, it's called Shoga.
Okay. Well, maybe they were saying something anti-racist recently, or talking to someone who is anti-racist. I would hope most, if not all of the guests, take that stance. But, well, apparently there is on Ireland's number one racist message board, people were giving out about the Shoga sisters. But the best part of the story, you needed, like, if you read it, was like, one sicko said, "Those Egypts shouldn't be on the television." Like, really mild-mannered stuff. Like, one dirty pervert said, "Totally agree with that." It was like, this so not news.
It's a quality paper.
Imagine writing for a paper and going, people on a message board are saying something angry. That's a story.
You know? I'm led to believe, in fact, the tabloids take most of their stories from the blogs, from Irish blogs and stuff.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
No, and they don't change it, apparently. Oh, yeah. They just sign it like The Chancer and Una Rocks and all these other blog people.
Oh, ridiculous. All right, well, let's put an end to this. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a regular podcast, our St. Paddy's Day special.
See you then.
Good night.
Get licked. You're gonna see the reason why. All right, so we're just in there. We're still here in Cartoon Saloon, and we've just spotted this awesome printout of a comment that was on your blog.
Yeah, I don't publish all the comments that people leave on my blog for fairly obvious reasons. I'm kind of hoping this is a joke, but anyway, Liam's going to read it out. Okay. I didn't publish it, but we printed it out for the laugh.
All right, this comment says, I just want to say that I stumbled upon your blog by accident, but when I saw that its title was a play on the Book of Kells, I felt I had to post something. Now I have no idea who you are, and reading a couple of your posts doesn't really clarify that. But I feel I have to tell you I visited the Book of Kells when I was 18, and I never felt such boredom and disdain for a book in my life. The book sucks. Who gives a shit if it's old? It is boring. It should only be studied by historians who are too retarded to do important work. Any tourist guide that mentions this book should have in big bold letters, "This book sucks." Before you assume I'm some stupid Philistine, I'm very well read. I have read the most esoteric philosophy books one can find, anything from Plato to Foucault, but that is because these books actually have something to say, unlike the fucking stupid Book of Kells. Fuck you, Book of Kells, give me back those couple hours of my life. Sorry, I hate this book so much I felt I had to tell someone, and perhaps you deserve this rant in some ways, because you might be part of the pseudo-intellectual nerd class that thinks this book is worth visiting. That would make you part of the problem. Sad face. So
I just want to add to that this person is, I hope they're not real, because if they're real, they're very terrifying. And I think I might be part of the pseudo-intellectual nerd class, actually, because I do think it's worth visiting. And I think, you know, anyone who's kind of judging the Book of Kells on having read it seems to be missing the point a little bit. But anyway.
Okay, out.